pop-up cooling relief centre will open in the CBD to provide Melbourne's most vulnerable residents with a space to cool down on dangerously hot days.
Yes, that is from a story in the Melbourne Age that has the headline, Pop-up to cool down the vulnerable in Melbourne's deadly heat. You found Climate Conversations and this is our latest episode. Welcome, it's so great to have you on board. This podcast is assembled here in Shepparton in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people. I pay my respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Again, I almost forgot. I am the host, Robert McLean. Now let's hear the rest of the story from the Melbourne Age. Pop up to cool down the vulnerable in Melbourne's deadly heat.
The City of Melbourne and community health organisation CO Health have teamed up to create a cooling relief centre at 227 to 229 Bourke Street, previously a support hub for gig workers. It will be open for international students, the elderly, people experiencing homelessness, and those living in poorly ventilated housing or without access to air conditioning. The hub will be open from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays when the mercury hits 35 degrees until the end of February. Healthcare workers, including nurses, will attend on some days. CoHealth says the recent wet weather had been difficult for those sleeping rough, with an increase in skin infections and foot problems. Jason Russell, a former rough sleeper, said that when he lived on Melbourne streets he had been taken to hospital multiple times for heatstroke and dehydration during heat waves. I would have been totally dead or killed, it was that close, said Russell, who now works for the Council to Homeless Persons. He described the centre as life support for those living on the streets during extreme weather events. In places like Berlin and Moscow, in the winter, if you're homeless, it's a death sentence, Russell said. In Melbourne, it's similar because people die every month during summer because of the weather. For many rough sleepers, the only places to access air conditioning are shopping centres, banks, public toilets and libraries, Russell said. When you go to supermarkets, you can stand in there, but you get hounded by security. Visitors to the centre will also receive cold refreshments, snacks, cooling packs, and vouchers for movies, 7-Eleven and Boost Juice. Krista Milne, one of the City of Melbourne's chief heat officers, said the hub was one of several measures being implemented by the council to tackle heat. Hours will also be extended at three city libraries on extremely hot days. Melbourne has had 3 days of 35 degrees or higher so far this summer. We are expecting quite a hot February and some other climate phenomenons that are causing a lot of rain. The Tasman has warmed and that's causing the rain. However, Australia is experiencing a lot of heat waves, Milne said. She said the council would also be planting 3,000 trees a year to provide shade and help reduce temperatures. The aim is to cover 40% of the city with trees by 2030 and cool Melbourne by 4 degrees. Our best asset to cool the city is our urban forest, Milne said. Making sure where we can't plant a tree, there's shading, as well as having permeable paving, and green tram stops with a green roof to provide more cooling. Get to the heart of what's happening with climate change and the environment. Sign up for our fortnightly environment newsletter. Key points. The City of Melbourne and community health organisation CO Health have teamed up to create a temporary hub where vulnerable Melburnians can access a cool place on 35-degree days. Former rough sleeper Jason Russell almost died from a heatstroke and dehydration when he was rough sleeping in Melbourne during a heatwave. The hub will also have healthcare workers including registered nurses to provide support to visitors, on some days.
Now let's hear 90 seconds from Yale Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many people and organizations want to help reduce global warming, but it can be hard to know where to start or how to track the progress they're making. Mark Radonich is with Emerald Technology Group. The company makes a smartphone app called Get Green to help solve that problem.
Get Green is an app that's freely available. It educates and engages people on sustainable decisions that they can make in their daily life.
The app recommends ways to limit or reduce carbon pollution, like walking to work or planting trees. By completing different challenges, people can earn points, which helps them build new habits and even compete with others for a high score.
We like to say it's fun to use.
Companies, organizations, and local governments that have set climate goals can also use Get Green to help their communities achieve those goals. For example, a beverage company called Talking Rain recently got more than 100 of their employees to collectively log more than 3,000 climate-friendly actions in 1 month. Radonich says this kind of technology can help organizations track their progress on sustainability.
The idea that we can all do something is the strength of the app.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Let's listen now to a story from the Sydney Morning Herald by Hamish Hasty. It has the headline, Cook Jumps to Defence of Green Lawyers as Dutton Vows to End Funding. Let's listen to the audio now, and you'll find a link for the story in the show notes.
West Australian Premier Roger Cook has leapt to the defence of the Environmental Defender's Office as the Coalition vowed to end federal funding of the law firm behind legal challenges of major oil and gas projects. Speaking from Perth on Tuesday, opposition leader Peter Dutton announced he would defund the EDO if his party was returned to government. The Albanese government has tipped $8.3 million into the firm since coming to power in 2022. While the Cook government funded the WA branch to the tune of $150,000 last financial year. The WA government has budgeted a further $150,000 over the next 2 years, which the WA Liberals have pledged to cease if they win the 2025 election. Despite harbouring its own concerns about the EDO, and Cook himself in December lamenting well-funded green organisations dividing Indigenous groups to engage in environmental lawfare, the WA government will continue its funding. On Tuesday, Cook accused Dutton of engaging in knee-jerk politics. Well, the funding that goes into the whole environmental protection regime is about continuing to make sure that voices are heard in that debate, Cook said. I think to simply move to the idea that you can defund the EDO is a knee-jerk, political retail sort of response to the situation. We know that the people of Western Australia and Australia want to protect our environment and see the responsible development of our resources, making sure all voices are heard. And that court process is an important part of that. Dutton, who cut his WA trip short to return to flood-affected areas in Queensland, said his government would defund the body because it was a bunch of radical environmentalists not approaching situations with objectiveness. The Environmental Defender's Office is a body which has been funded by the Albanese government to try and attack mining companies, and to try and stymie new developments, and to try and revisit approvals that have already been given, he said. They don't have the best interests of Western Australians at heart, and we think it needs to be defunded, and that's exactly what we'll do if we win government. The EDO was the subject of a stinging critique by Federal Court Justice Natalie Charlesworth earlier this month after she lifted an injunction preventing Santos from installing a gas pipeline near the Tiwi Islands for its $5.8 billion Barossa project. Charlesworth said the EDO confected evidence and coached witnesses, and the judgment shone a spotlight on the government funding it received. Federal opposition environment, fisheries and forestry spokesman John O'Dunham said Labor had not held the EDO accountable for its inexcusable conduct in the Barossa court case and needed to do so. The EDO is also supporting Murujuga traditional owner Raylene Cooper's legal efforts to have Woodside Scarborough gas project halted over concerns about seismic testing impacts on whales off the WA coast. Cooper has backed the efforts of the EDO in her case, which she said helped her navigate a legal system that was biased against her people, her stories and her culture. We are relevant people, all of us, and we are being attacked, he said. We matter. My people matter. Our stories matter. When are we going to be heard?
Join me now as you listen to the audio from a 10 News story included in a story by the New Daily, which has the headline, Hot bursts and temperatures soaring in Melbourne, Sydney.
Good evening. It came while they slept. A rush of water bursting through suburbs and into homes north of Brisbane. Dozens of houses have been inundated after heavy rain began falling and didn't stop. Our reporters are live in the worst hit areas, and Tim Collitz is in Laidley, where water seeped into the heart of the town. And we have Matthew Kustunen, who's in Caboolture, where we begin our coverage tonight. Matt, starting with you, you have some breaking news for us.
Good evening, Sandra. An emergency warning is in place for Beacherley, a suburb not far from here, with, of course, the floodwaters continuing to rise. Here at Caboolture, things have started to slow down, but people are not taking chances. Some residents have chosen to evacuate. Others are choosing to stay. We've also seen 6 evacuation centres opened right across the region here for those who are choosing to ride out this flood elsewhere from their homes. Of course, it caps off a very busy 12 hours, not just for emergency services who have seen more or around 30 flood rescues, but for the thousands of southeast Queenslanders who've woken up with homes being inundated with water.
A home lost to floods.
Been here nearly 44 years next week, and it's never been like this before.
The Peacocks at Bray Park put a life jacket on their granddaughter.
And I wake my son up because he lives underneath. Got a bit cranky, he thought I was just waking him up, but he got out of bed and the next minute he's up to his knees in water.
The 15th property submerged in one suburb in one night.
I was scared, yeah. I've never had anything like this happen.
So was Dennis Hanlett in Samford.
Sleeping and I heard this noise and I thought, what the hell is that?
He quickly climbed onto the bonnet of his ute where he was surrounded and stranded for hours.
I was getting a bit concerned a couple of times. So I thought, this is not looking good, you know.
This was the South Pine River after more than 350 millimetres of rain fell in just hours. The bowls club's new greens now look more like swimming pools.
I had a big tournament here yesterday and, come down this morning and total devastation down here, so a bit of a rebuild.
Absolute devastation. Yeah, it would be 10 times worse than what it was on the 27th of February 2 years ago.
These floodwaters came in fast and were powerful. Take a look at how high the waters rose here at the Sanford Bowls Club overnight, sending chairs like this right across the room. The repair bill for this bowls club alone expected to be in the millions of dollars.
Caboolture is soaked. Almost 300 millimetres roared down, runoff filling a rugby field. In Moray Field, cars and trucks are still underwater. Shoppers ran to save their cars at the shopping centre as water again filled an underground car park. Schools are closed, roads are severed and dangerous.
Please take care, and certainly if the road is flooded, forget it, do not drive on it.
The flood threat is moving north. This is Caloundra. Streets are underwater. The Bureau says at this stage, major rivers like Brisbane, Logan, Caboolture should be able to absorb runoff. At this stage, Premier Stephen Miles says Queensland won't ask for help a third time in 6 weeks.
The other states and indeed the Albanese government will respond quickly when we make those requests for assistance.
Let's go to Tim Collitz now, who's live in Laidley. And Tim, residents there were woken by a rather emergency alert.
That's right, Sandra. The mobile phones at dozens of homes across Laidley began buzzing just at around midnight as the Lockyer Valley Regional Council activated its emergency alert system with reports of a flood surge heading straight toward the town. Now, it's been an exhausting day for both locals and, of course, emergency responders and police, who we saw just a short time ago frantically checking out a local flooded causeway following reports of children in the water floating on wheelie bins. Crazy act in this sort of situation. And of course, we're all also hearing reports now of the main Warrego Highway, the main route between here and Toowoomba. That's now been cut in two places, at Warra and at Forest Hill. So piling on more drama for the good folk of the Lockyer Valley, a very sodden Lockyer Valley. The food bowl of the southeast. But today, this prime farming land is impassable and well underwater, with the town of Laidley squarely in the crosshairs.
3 floods in a matter of a year. That is, a little bit tiring. It breaks my heart, but what do you do?
Laidley Creek, already at capacity, burst its banks. People were caught in their cars.
The crews went to a number of jobs, cars in 2 flooded causeways, cars driving around road closed signs, which can cause a lot of grief for the crews.
Laidley's flood levee was designed to divert floodwater away from the main street. Up to 8 local businesses, though, went under. Residents knew it was coming.
4:30, the emergency alert came through. So I looked at that and thought, okay, I need to get up.
It bought Jane Matthews time to move her frocks.
It's not too bad, actually. It's just a kind of a layer of water and mud throughout the shop.
Right now, the focus here in Laidley is on clean-up, using some pretty heavy machinery, heavy trucks, and, of course, plenty of brooms in the shop fronts.
Residents now waiting and watching to see what's next, with more rain on the way.
We're out of power now, and we're just waiting for to see what happens next.
Close, obviously, and just wait and see if the water rises again, and then once we're back in action and we're clear of weather, then we'll come assess and see what we can do.
Mulgowie, a tiny town of 166, almost went under. Gauges collected around 211 millimetres in just 72 hours. More than 150 millimetres was recorded at Jandowie in the Western Downs. SES volunteers door-knocked the town at 2 a.m, telling residents to prepare for flash flooding. It came. Garages and backyards were submerged. The Bremer River in Ipswich again broke its banks. The mayor wants flood-weary residents to be ready for anything.
So the main parts of Ipswich are still waiting for that rain coming through the rivers as it comes out of the Lockyer and comes into the Ipswich area. It's heartbreaking when it happens. So you can be prepared, but it's still a really tough road.
Now we have a story on Michael West Media. It's by Rex Patrick and Philip Dorling. It has the headline, Climate Betrayal: How Backroom Deals with Japan Locked Australia In for Decades of Gas. The story begins. The International Energy Agency forcefully states that the pathway to net zero by 2050 is a very narrow one and requires that no new oil or gas fields get approved. And yet, despite the Australian public voting for Labor's pledge to aggressively reduce emissions, on the day after he was sworn in as Australia's 31st Prime Minister, Albanese was at Kantai in Tokyo, making a country pledge of better energy security for Japan. Recent Freedom of Information, that's FOI, releases and close examination of a mosaic of evidence has shed new light on who's been convincing the government to back away from turning off the gas tap. Japan has the fourth largest economy in the world, but it's also a country with very low energy self-sufficiency. Japan is highly reliant on imports to meet its energy needs.
From Anthropocene magazine, we have a story about taking climate parables from the page to the stage in a live event series. The idea, they say, is to blend science and technology, fiction and science fiction, video, art and music in entirely new ways. They say all the skills we've honed through decades of science journalism, smart reporting through fact-checking and professional editing will add dimensions rarely seen on stage. You'll find the link for that story in the show notes.
Genre feels sort of like magic because it allows us to channel our hopes and fears for the future into stories that have the potential to actually become reality. Set aside your 2023 biases, uncloak your well-earned cynicism, and lean into the magic, possibility, and innovation that the future holds. The future is closer than you think.
Yes, we've reached the end of this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. It's been great to have you along. Now, don't forget to follow this podcast, because if you do that, you'll be alerted every time I publish a new episode. Now, also, my screen is still alive with stories about the climate crisis, and so I'll put as many links as I can in the show notes. So go there, read them, check them out, and please make some decisions about how you're going to respond to the climate crisis. Also, I'd love to know what you think about this podcast, so please contact me at r.mclean7@icloud.com. Don't hold back, good or bad, please tell me. I need to know. Also, I'd love to have your voice on this podcast, so give me a call or contact me via that same email address, and I'll contact you, and maybe, just maybe, I can interview you, and your voice will be on this podcast. So please share this, share it with your friends, put it on your networks, let other people know what's happening with the climate crisis. It's important. We need everybody on board. To change everything, we need everyone. So until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Now you take care and stay safe.